With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Alrighty, welcome in everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening or watching if you're on YouTube. Now you're probably thinking this is not Jax Falcone, and it is not. This is Michael Duncan, the normal producer. But we're here today with a special episode of Undrafted. With me, I got Mark at MasterJune70 and our special guest, Jaquan Hardy. How's it going, Jaquan?
Man, I'm happy to be here. God is great, man. A perfect day. Can't complain. I'm great. I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're happy to have you here. How about you, Mark?
I'm excited that we're, you know, three of us living in three different time zones and different places of the world can just unite and discuss a really exciting young prospect. So I'm excited.
Yeah. So today, like I said, we have an interview with Tiffin running back number four, Jaquan Hardy. He's just finishing up in college and he's going to be heading into the NFL draft this year. And we're going to talk to him about his life leading up to the draft, some time in college. Obviously, there's going to be some football related questions, but also we want to get to know him as a guy, not just a football player. And, you know, the long term goal is we'd love to see him in the NFL, and he makes it really easy to root for him. So let's get to know him. So Jaquan, to start, can you tell us about your family and how they've handled your road to this point, you know, through college and leading up, especially this last year?
Yeah. So, my family, I love my family. First off, my dad, my mom has always been there for me, through every facet of my life. Even my brothers, growing up, I looked up to my dad, obviously, and my brothers were always there for me. I have one sister, they were there as well. So we're all tight. We still talk with each other. We probably get on the phone like once a week. We're all talking. We're very family oriented. I love my family, like I said. And they definitely helped me throughout every single facet of my life, like I was saying. Even picking a college, they helped me. And just figuring out to where I want to be at in life, definitely.
Are you the oldest?
Say it again.
Are you the oldest?
No, I'm actually the youngest.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Baby Jaquan.
So how did that decision happen with college? Like you said that they helped you decide that. And I know I've heard in the past that you didn't get any D1 offers until track season, I believe.
Yeah.
So I guess kind of what went into that decision and how did they help with that?
So basically, I didn't want to go to a school where I would be another number because they understood that as well. They knew I could play. But at the end of the day, if I go somewhere and if it's like I'm just there and I'm not playing, I'm just riding the bench, then I basically just wasted my whole career of doing something where I could have actually went somewhere and played. So basically my dad and my mother, I talked to for them prior for like a good 2 to 3 months. And basically we talked about how I need to go somewhere where I can actually play, get my degree paid for, I should say. And where I would actually have fun at. So, like you said, I had no Division I offers. I literally had two D1 walk-ons. Those were from Ball State, and the other one was from Akron? I think it was Akron. Yeah, it was Akron. So two D1 walk-ons from Akron and Ball State. And don't get me wrong, the coaches there at the time, they were cool guys, but it wasn't a scholarship, so it really didn't it really didn't set them apart from other schools. Now, going to a D2 school, the level was not as high, but at the end of the day, it's the same type of football. There's really no difference at the end of the day to me. And I just knew my degree was going to get paid for. So that ended up being the biggest decision I made. And now I'm here having fun still to this day.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. It sounds like you guys are all really close knit. I mean, I remember, you know, when I was picking a college, obviously I did not have nearly as much to think about, but I did have a lot of those same conversations, and it's cool that your parents were that invested in it, and not just as you as like a football player and stuff like that. Like, you know, they care like you do about your education.
Right. Yeah. Now my mom's literally like a monkey on my back, always telling me, you need to get this done, you need to get that done. But, at the end of the day, she was right. I picked a great school.
She's going to like that.
Me especially. Yeah.
At the end of the day, she was right.
Yeah. That's just,
I think that's a good motto forever.
Moms
going
know what's up.
That's the truth.
It's all true.
And so touching on something else, I guess, that you kind of that I've read about in different interviews, something that's actually really close to my heart is a lot of the work that you've done with special needs, both in school, out of school. And I did a lot of the same stuff in high school, and I thought that was really cool to hear you talk about. And I'd love to know, I guess, kind of where that came from. And also, is that something that you're planning to continue with after college?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I ended up doing that in middle school. Now, I had a gym session towards the end of our school day, I would say, where we would have a whole period that would just focus on special during their gym class. And when I would watch them, I would see them have so much fun, even though they have disabilities. And it's like, it made me really think about when people have bad moods, like, how can you even be like this? Because there are kids that are blessed with less unfortunate things, and it's like they're happy all the time. And it's like, I don't know how people can be in a bad mood when it's like you're blessed, you're alive, you don't have no disabilities, man. Like you should be happy all the time. But I definitely plan on doing things in that sort of nature. Like, I plan on having my own camp, going back to my high school, having my own camp. And then I plan on having my own camp for college as well, kids with special needs. And then if my high school wants to do that as well, I'm planning on doing that as well.
That's incredible, man.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Mark, you want to go with the next one?
Yeah, sure. Let's just say things don't work out in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, we're positive people and we know it's going to work out. But let's hypothetically say that things don't work out in the NFL. And then you're put into a position where football is no longer at the forefront of your life. Mm-hmm. What do you see yourself pursuing instead? Kind of like your backup contingency plan if all doesn't turn out the way you want it in the NFL.
Right. No, that's a good question. So I end up going to school and becoming a business major. So as a little kid, I always had a dream of owning my own business. Now, really, I didn't really figure out what I wanted to do until I was a junior in college. And that was basically owning my own type of 24/7 gym, my own restaurant if I wanted to, owning my own smoothie shop. But basically just owning my own type of business, because it's always been a dream of mine since I was a kid.
So what about that?
Sorry, I was just going to say about you got me at food and restaurants. So the gym thing, yeah, okay, not so attractive to me. But the food.
Okay, so if you had opened up a restaurant,
what kind of food would you have at your restaurant?
Oh, everything, really. I'm thinking like burgers, ribs, steak, salmon, filet, perch, even fried foods, fries, obviously, BLTs, literally everything you could think of. I want to really mix it up. And speaking of you said you didn't like the gym, so I might have to add some food in my gym just to get guys like you in there, man.
Now that I like.
Got to, man. I got to switch it up. I love being different, man.
There you go. Not sure how effective it would be, but yes. I love it. It would definitely make me go to the gym.
See, what we're doing now is we're actually coming up with a new concept here, Jaquan. We're coming up with the restaurant /gym. It's a new concept. Yeah. There we go. Hey.
It's possible. Anything to Christ, it's possible. It is.
Oh, man. I love that. My dad would love the smoothie shop, by the way. He'll be your first customer. I don't think he goes a day without a smoothie. I don't really know why, but that's awesome, man.
Yeah. On a different note, if, you know, football or otherwise, what's a famous person that comes to mind that you really admire and why? It doesn't have to be a football player. Just could be someone that we'd all know that's famous that you really admire and you want to just tell us about.
That's a great question. I would say Philip Lindsay because coming out of college, he wasn't the biggest guy. He wasn't the biggest name. And he was an underdog, really. And I feel like he's one of the best backs in the league right now to this day. And I feel like he's paved the way for guys that are, like, undersized, overlooked. And he's a great person in general. Speaking about Philip, like I said, I'm training at Landau. I've actually got to pick his brain.
I was going to say, he's up in Colorado, isn't he?
Yeah, that's the crazy part. So, like, I literally watched him. I didn't watch him physically, but I watched his pro days on YouTube. I watched him go through his process of getting into the league. And it's crazy to see somebody like that in person because I was able to pick his brain. And he was just a great guy all around in general. And he's a guy I admire because, like I said, he's paved the way for guys that are underdogs, really.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Hey, yeah, his story is awesome. I mean, yeah. I kind of remember as it was happening, it was, you know, obviously, you know, I live out in Philly, but I remember reading about the dude from Colorado that's kind of making noise at camp. And then they had just drafted, I think, Royce Freeman in like the third round. So everyone was kind of not tossing Philip Lindsay aside, but no one's really giving it a second thought. Obviously, it's going to be the third round back. And I mean, he made a name for himself.
When you're good and productive and overlooked, you get a chip on your shoulder. And that's the motivation that some people need. And Philip Lindsay is definitely that kind of player. I remember him coming out. And I think that's a great answer because, I mean, you being an underdog as well, right? We're all here for you. And, you know, our goal is to get you noticed like Philip Lindsay was noticed and, you know, get your name on the map. So I love the Philip Lindsay answer. So very happy with that.
Yes, sir.
That's awesome. I hadn't even thought about the Colorado connection. That's really cool.
Small world, man.
It is. So one final question to kind of transition us a little more into football. So I was, you know, doing research, digging around online. I found an interview with you from high school and it looked like you wore number 5 when in college you wore number 4. Is there any significance to either of those or the change or I don't know. Is there any story behind it?
So, like I said, I had brothers in high school that was playing football as well. So I wore number 5 basically for my older brother because that's what he wore during his time in high school. And I feel like it was like basically him passing down the torch to me once I wore number 5 in high school. But after that, I ended up going to college. I really didn't care what number I wore. I just wanted to get the opportunity to play, showcase my abilities, and just go out there and have fun. So high school, I wore number 5 for my brother, and once I got to college, they gave me number 4. I wasn't mad or anything, but I just, like I said, I just wanted to go out there and get the opportunity and just have fun.
Yeah, you were one of, what, 32 running backs at Tiffin your freshman year?
I kid you not, 32.
I thought that was insane.
32. There was guys, I actually think we had a little bit, I want to say, 35, but 3 guys got moved to fullback and tight end, fullback/tight end position. Then we were at 32, and then like 2 or 5 guys quit. More guys moved to wide receiver, fullback and tight end as well. But at the end of the day, it didn't faze me. I just needed to make sure that I took every rep like it was my last. And like I'm here today, and it's just adversity. I mean, at the end of the day, you just got to trust the process.
I like it. Yeah. Mark, you want to go?
Sure. Are you sure you didn't open up your, you know, fast food/gym at that time and attracted 25 running backs and said, hey, check out that place over there?
I promise.
That's devious.
Anyways, well, I am the devil. So what attracted you to become a running back? Of all positions, what attracted you to become a running back and not anything else? Like what?
You switch to wide receiver, fullback, quarterback, offensive line when there was 32 of you?
Yeah. Especially with the fact that there was 32 of you. What made you stick to that, stick to your guns and say, you know what, I'm going to do this?
Yeah. Basically, just like growing up, I watched guys like LaDainian Tomlinson, guys like Ricky Williams, and it just – it inspired me really. And ever since then, I ran with it. But the position comes to me naturally. I want to say in middle school where we had recess, that's where it really showed me. Like, that's where I stood out. And I was like, you know what? I'm actually pretty good at this position. I might want to actually stick to this position and see how great I am. But I just put my head down and just keep grinding every single day. Like, the position comes to me naturally. I feel like I catch the ball very fluent. I feel like I run very fluent. I'm flexible. And I just try to have fun at the end of the day. So I try not to treat it like it's a job, because if you treat it like it's a job, then it's going to become more stressful and you might not have fun with it. So,
Well, I'm a middle school teacher, by the way. So yeah. I can concur that everything that you learn in life, you learn in middle school. So it makes total sense to me. So,
and Mark also goes out and plays running back with the middle schoolers. He also thinks that he excels at running back against the middle schoolers.
I am very fluid, very fluid.
You out there taking people's ankles and stuff?
He prefers to just run right through them. It's less work.
Yes, I'm one of those violent runners, actually. Yeah, I'm a Chris Carson, the Chris Carson of middle school.
Derrick Henry.
Oh, yes, man.
I stiff arm. You know, if you're on the field, anything can happen, right? Yes. As long as you're on the field. What goes on the field stays on the field. So.
I know that's
right. And that's what you tell their parents when they come in for a
conference. They come back home with a bruised eye.
It's a different approach, but so far the results have been quite good. So,
Definitely.
So a question about a different sport. I saw that you had played some rugby, I guess, in like middle school, high school. Does that, because I've seen the way you run it, it is very, violent. Yeah. Does your rugby experience impact the way that you choose to play football or the way that you are on the field?
Rugby has made me into the man who I am today, and it inspired me in many ways. It inspired me, such as by not putting on pads and you're just throwing your body out there, just going out there, having fun, getting it on. But it changed me in a way of being in more condition, because you don't get a break in rugby. You tackle a guy and then you're right back up. There is no pause, like, okay, what's the play now, like football. But in rugby, you're straight into it. The only break you get is when somebody scores, and that's about 15 seconds. And then the actual halftime, which is about 15 minutes, but you have to be conditioned in rugby. It's totally different in football, but it's made me into the man who I am today. And I'm proud that I actually played that sport and figured out how to learn it, because it's not like you just go out there, toss the ball behind you. It's not like that. There's more to it. There's way more to it.
Just on a side note, did you know, Jaquan, I played rugby at university?
No way.
I did. I know you're looking at the physique. Yeah. You're saying to yourself.
What position did you play?
That guy looks like a rugby player. Yeah, actually, and you're going to laugh at what position I played. I played back. So I was one of the
really
quote-unquote fast guys. Yes. Tells you how good our rugby team was. Yeah, I played at Trent University in Canada. We never won a game, just to let you know. But I can echo what you said. It's a it's quite a different game. I actually played football in high school too. So I've played both games. Totally different. It's nonstop. And like you said, it's different, but because it continues, you don't get the stoppage and you don't have the protection. So it's a totally different game, but, I can concur. It's both games are tough to play. Both are similar yet different. But I think, you know, the fact that you've played both just kind of adds a little bit of a certain element to your game. You know, like, it's a slightly different running style. But again, being able to play a couple sports, it really kind of enhances you as an athlete. Not saying that it's worked for me, because it hasn't. But apart from me, you know, people that have played more than one sport, I think it's just a good way to kind of build up your sense of competition and your athleticism.
I agree 100%. Definitely.
That's awesome. I'm sorry it didn't work out for you, Mark.
I was going to say, it's awesome that you're finding so many cool things about me today. I'm just dropping these things.
Yeah, Jaquan's he's here to interview you.
Dimes. That's right.
We're trying to get NFL teams interested in Mark. He can stiff arm third graders.
Yeah. No, hey, yeah. Middle school.
Oh, sorry, middle school. My bad.
Sixth grader.
Oh man. All right. So another question of things I found on the internet. Do you actually carry around two tennis balls all the time? And where did that come from?
It's actually three tennis balls, but two rarely, more three. So
Jesus.
I like learning things every single day, whether that's figuring out how to stretch, whether that's figuring out how to run a 40, whether that's whatever it is, like playing a video game. I don't care. I like learning things every single day. Now, I would say mid-November, I had time to myself because we didn't have a season. So I was able to actually focus on a lot of things and what I wanted to do in my life. And juggling happened to be one of them. I've always wanted to figure out how to juggle. Okay. And I think it took me about actually like a week and a half to get comfortable doing it, because it's not like you just toss one ball over to the other hand. There's a rhythm to it. You have to actually be invested in it. You can't just be out there just going through the motions. But I literally carry three balls in my actual backpack that Landau gave us now. But I carry three tennis balls with me every single day, and it helps me just train on my hand-eye coordination and just basically slowing things down for me and just being aware of a lot of things.
So have you noticed a difference in your ability to catch a football, or just like, I guess, the natural, I guess, lack of a thought process almost the tennis balls?
Yeah, because there would be times where if a ball was thrown to me, I would actually have time to think to myself, like, oh, am I going to catch this? Am I going to catch this? But now it's like I'm not thinking. I'm just catching the football and I'm just running with it. So it's fun because it's actually, like I said, it took me like a week and a half to figure out how to juggle. So like, I don't know why I didn't pick up on this sooner, but it made me realize where I don't have to think. I just have to react at the end of the day. And that's way better than going on the field and thinking about what I need to do. Or like, I might think, and the next thing you know, I'm not doing the right thing when I can react and do all the right things.
Yeah, it seems like when it comes to, I guess, catching a football, you know, with all of my football experience, the last thing you'd want to be doing is thinking about it.
Exactly. I mean,
it feels like that's normally where, you know, people make mistakes.
You would know Nelson Aguilar or what's his name?
Oh, come on, man.
Yeah, it was a low blow.
All right. It's all jokes, man.
It's the Philly connection is just great. I love that.
It's all jokes, baby. It's all
Hey, I'll tell you what. The Eagles could have used me at wide receiver these past couple seasons.
Hey, the Eagles could have used Nelson Aguilar this past year. What are you talking about?
You're not wrong.
He actually didn't do too bad this year.
He did great. He was the top option. It was crazy.
Yeah. He was great. I got a question about your juggling. Like I've never juggled before. Hard to believe because I've done so many other things that you're finding out. juggling has not been, might be on my bucket list, but it's not there yet. What was the toughest thing to learn about juggling, and how could you relate that to football? Because to me, juggling is probably obviously a lot of skills involved, because it's not easy. You learned it in the week, so that's pretty impressive. So how could you somehow take what you've learned from juggling and you know, apply that to the game?
It's a great question. My biggest word for that, I would say, is being patient and basically like going back to reacting skills. Because so for juggling, you would want the two balls. You want two balls in your main hand. So my main hand, I would have two tennis balls, right? And in my opposite hand, which is my left hand, I'll have one ball. Now you're being patient when throwing the ball. And that's basically just like what football is, because there's times when you need to pull a specific key out of your pocket, basically, and use it, really. And that's just like how juggling is. So juggling is definitely a great way to be patient, just like how football is.
So if I can learn to juggle, I can be in the NFL.
Not necessarily, but it is a step. It's definitely one of the keys you will need.
If that's the first step, and that's what I'm doing tomorrow. It's the first step, baby.
I'll tell you, if you can have three balls in your hands, though, you deserve to be in the NFL.
Yeah.
Moving on from that. So in terms of patience, I've noticed in a couple other times that you've talked, and also just from watching your film, I mean, I know you consider yourself a home run threat, and I think the numbers in the film would definitely agree with that. But how would you, I guess, balance being a home run threat, but also not wanting to take negative plays?
Right. And that's a great question, because it's unfortunate I wasn't able to show the opportunity this year, because I really wanted to go off and have fun and show how I'm able to actually be coachable and stick on the routine. And even if I'm not able to get the greatest amount of yards, I'm able to just stick it up in there and get what I can get. But really, at the end of the day, for me, it is a balance, but I try to be as coachable as possible. I try to do what I'm told to do. And once I get to the second or third level, I'm really just trying to play as smart as possible and just get to the easiest route to the end zone or the easiest route to a first down, and try not to overdo things. Like, there were times where I would catch myself overdoing things 2019, but I wasn't able to showcase that this year. So it's unfortunate, but it's a blessing in disguise at the same time.
Yeah. So actually, speaking of, I guess, kind of, you know, trying not to take negative plays, I know Mark had a question for you about a specific stat with fumbles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we let's just quickly look at your stats, because they're pretty impressive. So, like, you know, in your first season in 2016-17, you played 11 games, only 90 rushes, but again, 576 yards for your rookie season. Then you broke out in 2017-18 with over 1,000 yards. But one thing I did notice, and this is, you know, happens as a running back, right? You have your ups and downs. That year, you had 6 fumbles. Mm-hmm. Now, conversely, 2 years later in your final year, you had roughly the same amount of carries, but you had 1 fumble. So my question to you is, obviously, the 2017-18 season, you had a little bit of difficulty holding onto the ball, but obviously 2 years later, that was not a problem anymore. Was there anything in particular that you worked on to alleviate that problem?
Yeah. So that's a great question, actually. So my last season, as a Tiffin Dragon, my head coach would preach CPW. So CPW stands for cover the point, pin the elbow, and wrist up. Now, he would preach this every single day, and I mean every single day, to where it was annoying, but it was like one of the biggest keys to actually get you on the field. Now, I had another specific ball. It was a black ball that had somewhat of a bungee cord to it. I would connect it to a doorknob, or I would stick it inside of a door, and I would always basically work on CPW while I'm just sitting there at home. If I'm not busy, I work on it. Like, at the end of the day, you can always, you can do things during football, but if you're really like taking your time outside of football, you're actually going to learn it more often. And I feel like that's what really made me thrive, of basically ball security. And that really helped me. It really did.
It sounds like you were doing your best kind of like with the tennis balls, where you were just trying to get away from having to think about it. You know, if you literally are doing that stuff so constantly, it becomes, you know, you're not going to hold a ball with the CPW, which I guess it clearly worked. I mean,
it did. And I got to a point where I was actually comfortable holding the ball like that and sprinting with it. So it didn't bother me after a while. But like you said, just the more you do it, the easier it'll be, and you'll just react and not have to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, especially at the next level. I mean, you have no clue how many opportunities you're going to get. And you see young running backs in the NFL all the time. You know, they go out there, they're nervous, and maybe a fumble will end their whole day running the ball.
Yeah.
Because you need to make the most of those opportunities. And if that's one less thing you got to worry about, then that's awesome.
I agree 100%.
Speaking of opportunity, let's go back in time. Let's go back in history. What was the greatest moment as a running back running at Tiffin? What was the best game, or the best maybe series, or the best play that you remember that you look back on with a lot of fondness and great memories?
That's a great question. So my last collegiate level football game, I would say, was Finley. And Finley, we haven't beaten Finley for 26 years. So that game was very personal for me. very personal. But other than that, we beat those guys. I think the score was like 52 to 45. We actually got an amazing conference ring out of that game as well. But I would say my favorite play was also in that game as well. I had a counter play, and I think the inside gap was 8 and up by the DN. He squeezed down, so I ended up – actually, he bit down on an inside play. So I bounced out. I broke around 5 to 6 tackles, and I dove for the end zone. And it was all a blur during the actual play. But when I go back and when I look at the actual play, it's crazy because it was just me reacting. And I didn't think whatsoever of it. And it was just – I was like, wow, I actually did that. That's crazy. That was fun. But let's do it again. But that was my favorite play, my favorite game. We didn't beat them, like I said, for 26 years, and we finally beat them. So we made history. We got an awesome conference ring out of that, and it was personal for me, definitely.
And I guess so that ended up being your final game at Tiffin.
It was. So actually, the game after that was my final game. So
oh, you went one more. Okay.
Right. So that game was going to decide whether we were going to go into the playoffs or not. So we actually won that game, got a conference ring, and we got right into the playoffs. It was awesome.
Awesome.
I like the way you kind of described it, like it was a blur. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you're describing the play to us, you're recalling it with so much clarity. Yes. And so much precision. It kind of makes me ask this question. You know, when you're out there, you seem to be like, when you describe that last play, you're like, you are mentally focused and you are watching and seeing what every player on the defense that's kind of in contact or would be in contact with you, what they're doing, how they're going to the left or the right. How much of that are you doing thinking, and how much do you think is you're just going for it? It's just like the reaction time has got to be so quick. How would you describe to a non-running back, like most of us are non-running backs?
Most of us.
Yeah.
Two of the three of us.
Even in high school, I played football, but I was definitely not a running back, hard to believe. But how would you describe to somebody that isn't a running back? Because the thing that I'm kind of interested in, it just as a, you know, a viewer or analysis, just looking at what goes into the mind of a running back, is how much of it is that you are going, well, he's moving there. I'm going to go here. I'm thinking about it. It's mental. Whereas – boom, I'm just like, boom, 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 boom. And like, right. How would you describe the difference between the two, you know, reactions?
So I feel like at the end of the day, you want to treat it as art. Now, what I mean by that is you basically fall in love with it. And at the end of the day, you have your objectives. You know what to do. So you have to be coachable. Now, if all goes to hell, you need to make sure you have a backup plan. So say if both of the A gaps are 8 and up, you do have an obligation to bounce to B. Now, if B is 8 and up as well, do you need to have another obligation and get the heck out of there and go score or go get a first down, whatever you need to do. But just by going over practice reps, when you're going over your practice reps, treat them like game reps. And I'm telling you, when you get to game time, it's going to be simple because you've already been there. If you're already in the middle of practice, seeing the guys out there, you're taking mental reps. You're like, okay, this is going to happen. So I need to do this. And now if that happens, then I'm obligated to have this type of situation. And you just always got to be prepared. Really. That's all it is.
So that way, when you get there, you don't have to think about it.
Exactly. Go back to reacting again.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, I like that. That's a great answer. It's kind of like Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, where he basically says if you practice and practice and practice, eventually you know, you're because I think there's a for some of us that don't play football, we look at practice as practice. We're not interested in practice, but you're telling us that practice is so important because it really sets you up for the game where you and like your CPW. I mean, mm-hmm. these are all examples to me that getting things driven into you to the point where it might be ad nauseum, but when it comes down to the game, those things come second nature to you. So I just think it's really fascinating that, you know, literally the term drill is drilling it into you mm-hmm. to the point where you are ready to just be instinctive. I love it. Love that.
Yeah. I'm all about the small things. A lot of small things will eventually carry on to bigger things. But once you get the small things down, life will be way much easier.
Agreed. All right. So before we get into, I guess, your path to the draft mm-hmm. to steal, I'm pretty sure that's a TV show on NFL Network, but two quick fire questions about NFL players.
Yes, sir.
So first one, what player was your favorite growing up and which current running back in the NFL do you think reminds you of your style of play?
That's a great question. So right now I'll say, one of my favorite players growing up was probably Ricky Williams. He was a great guy. He just stood out to me the way his build was, his body composition, and the way he ran the ball. He was just mean with it, man. He's out there having fun. And I was like, you know what? I hope I play football like this guy at the end of the day. But for me, I would say my current favorite NFL players I feel like I remind myself of. I try to be me at the end of the day, but if I was to pick one or a couple, I would say I remind myself of a little bit of Todd Gurley.
Okay.
And I would say it may be Saquon because I hurdle when the time is right. I don't try to hurdle every single guy. I hurdle when the time is right. And there are times where we gotta break out in open space. Once you get in open space, it's a sprint to the end zone.
It's gotta be game over. Wins. All right. And second one, if you could take handoffs and passes from any quarterback, current or past, in the NFL, who would it be?
Ooh, I got to go with him, man. He's the GOAT. Tom Brady.
Yeah.
He's the GOAT. He's
Makes
the
GOAT. Sense.
I didn't wear that shirt today. I knew I should have worn that shirt. Oh,
he's the best, man.
He is. It's undeniable now. If it wasn't already, which it was. All right. So getting into the draft a little bit, obviously this last year has been bizarre for tons of reasons, but for you specifically, I imagine that this was probably the first fall in a very long time that you haven't been playing competitive football, at least when healthy. What has the last year looked like for you when you would have been playing football?
That's a great question. Like I had a lot of time on my hands. Basically, I would say being patient, staying ready was my biggest asset, I would say. And that's physically and mentally, because my coach would always tell me, we're going to have a season. Then it got to a point where it was like, yeah, I don't know if this is going to actually happen. But basically just staying physically and mentally ready was one of the biggest things for me, because if you're not mentally ready, you're not going to be physically ready. And if you don't have both of those assets, then you're just a liability at the end of the day.
That's fair. Yeah. Wow. So obviously you've spent a lot of this time, I'm assuming. I mean, I know you're at the camp now. So you've been preparing for the NFL draft. Has anyone, I guess any of your trainers, have they been telling you that you should be gaining or cutting weight? And I know earlier you were even telling us about like a nutrition and a workout plan. What do those look like?
So that's a great question. So I actually came in at Landau. I weighed in at 216, if not 217. After that, they wanted me to cut, I would say, 6 pounds, get me to 210. I'm actually 210 right now, literally. But my actual specific diet, it looks like more of specific meats, such as fish at times. I'll eat salmon sometimes. I'll eat some steak, but every single meal is about 500 calories. I'm drinking Body Armor every single day. I'm drinking a specific amount of water as well because they want me to be hydrated, and a lot of things matter, like such as sleep. Sleep was the biggest thing for me as well. They want us getting getting 8 to 9 hours of sleep a day. They got me eating fruits such as kiwis, bananas, strawberries, blueberries, a lot of good things. And vegetables as well was also a big thing for me as well.
So everything is really planned out for you. I mean, they tell you exactly what you got to be doing.
Yeah, literally.
There's Mark with the Chinese Doritos. Dorito man.
But, just to prove that I'm in China, everybody, and that this is actually, the Chinese have convinced me that this is actually made out of vegetables. So yeah. We're on the same planet, man. We're on the same planet. All good.
Just about.
Okay, I got a question about your workouts or your typical day. So, you know, I'm assuming you're training. Are you training 7 days a week? That's probably too much. You can enlighten me on this, but how many times do you train a week, and how many hours or how many times a day within that day do you train?
Mm-hmm. So we train 4 times out of the week, and we have 3 recovery days. Now, one of them is technically an off day, but 2 other days we go in, we stretch, we get a, not necessarily a massage, but for me, we work on my hips. So they'll do deep massage tissues to make sure my hips are correct, make sure my hips are aligned. We work out. So our first workout is usually an hour and a half. Now that's our speed training, and our actual lift is usually an hour. So we're training from 2 hours and 45 minutes to 3 hours. Just about every single day besides those 3 recovery days, because the recovery day only lasts for an hour. Like I said, we're going in stretching, we're getting a deep massage tissue, and we're basically just going in. We'll do, I don't know if you ever heard of Normatec boots, we'll do the Normatec boots. And if we want to go over to another recovery station, we'll go into the hot tubs and cold tubs, and we'll do our fire cups if we need it, and sometimes acupuncture.
Now, hot tubs I've done. That's it.
Yeah.
I've never done any of the rest of that.
The cold tub, it's got to do it. You got, no matter how much you hate,
you don't sound too excited about it.
You got to do it. So the method to their madness is we'll do hot tub, cold tub, hot tub, cold tub. Now, you can do that 2 or 3 times, but you always have to end on the hot tub to keep your muscles relax and basically ready after the cold tub.
Crazy. So you would say that the cold tub is cold?
It's basically frowned upon if you end on the cold tub, literally.
that's when you know you've not done well, you've had a bad practice here in the doghouse. To you, in the cold tub.
That's where Mark sends the middle schoolers that try and break his tackles.
I end up in the cold tub all the time. Just letting you know.
That's funny.
Man. So, Mark also mentioned that you have had some conversations with, I believe, some NFL, maybe not teams exactly. I'm not really sure. I don't know how this process works. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never really been recruited for the NFL, not yet anyway. But so have you talked to them, and what have you guys talked about, I guess?
That's a great question. So my showcase I went to, which was in Texas, I actually got to talk with 23 scouts, and they were all from different teams. So I got to talk with 23 teams. I actually got to talk to one of the national scouting combine guys. His name was John Peterson. Great guy. I had a great conversation with him. And basically, they were just talking about who I am as a person and who I am as a football player. But they were more concerned who I am as an actual person, because actions speak louder at the end of the day. And you can say all you want, but body language is what stood out the most for them guys. And some of the drills that they made us go through were catching the ball drills, going over bag drills. Basically, they incorporated some combine drills into our showcase. And one of the biggest drills that stood out the most I would say out there in Texas was the Deuce Staley drill. It was.
I was going to ask about that. Sorry, I got really pumped. He's a Philly guy.
I love that drill. I really love that drill. I feel very fluent in it as well. So I can't wait to go out there. My pro day is on March 22nd. So I'm going to go out there, crush it. It's at Toledo. Go out there, have fun. I hope we do that drill. If we don't do that drill, I'll be kind of disappointed. But if not, it's not the end of the day. Because I've been training so long on that drill, and I'm actually fluent in it. So
I want to say that that's something that either Deuce kind of came up with himself, or it's something that he really popularized. And I remember watching the combine last year, the year before, and that's when they like officially named it the Deuce drill. And he's out there with the guys, you know. I mean, he's such a popular coach. He's such a popular players coach. And I mean, we here in Philly love him. Obviously, he actually just left for Detroit, which we're torn up about. But I was hoping you'd get there. That's awesome. I love that. You called it the Deuce drill.
Yeah, I really do love that drill. Like it looks like an awkward drill, but it's awkward for a reason. They want to see how fluent your body is going through these bags, literally.
That's awesome. That's so funny.
Yeah.
And thanks for making him feel good about Philadelphia too. I mean, that was really nice of you.
I mean, after the Nelson Aguilar thing, I think
it's all about balance.
Oh man.
Yeah, whatever, Mark. All right. You want to ask him your fantasy related question, Mark?
Are we at the fantasy ones now?
Oh no, actually I did have one more thing. So when you were talking with those NFL teams, does it ever come up, I guess, the fact that you were D2, and maybe do they ever have questions about the jump in competition from the D2 all the way to the NFL as opposed to D1 to the NFL?
That's a great question, but I would say only one scout said that, and I think it was the Raiders scout. And now what I told him was, at the end of the day, my film speaks for itself. Like, especially at my position, I'm going to be doing this to the guys, whether they're at D1, D2, or D3. It doesn't matter to me. But
middle school.
I was also telling them how there's guys before me from small schools that's been very successful in the league. So it doesn't really faze me. You don't have to take a chance on me. Somebody else will, and you're going to miss out, man. That's all I'm going to say. And he was stunned at first. He was like, you know what? I like where you're coming from. That makes sense. And it really caught him off guard, because I was coming with the facts, man. I'm all about facts, really. Can't get mad at the facts.
I love that attitude, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, because at the end of the day, you're right. You know, if he doesn't take a chance on you, someone will. And I mean, you said it earlier, Tom Brady. I mean, every team in the NFL had a chance to draft him about 5 or 6 times. So
yeah, he came in 6th round. Now look at him, crazy.
Pick number 199. It's wild.
Exactly.
I got one more question. Sorry. About your weight. Mm-hmm. You were saying that when you came in, you were at 217 pounds.
Right.
And now they said basically slimmed down to 210. Excuse me. Couple questions from that. This is very fascinating to me. When you're 217 pounds versus what you are now, 210, it's 7 pounds. Now, to someone like me, that doesn't feel like a lot. Okay. Do you feel as a runner, as a person just moving around, do you feel that 7 pounds is significant, or is it just 7 pounds?
That's a great question. I would say in between. Now, the reason why I say that is because I slimmed down just a little bit just to run even more faster than I was before. Now, when I first got here, I was running around a 4.58 40. Now I'm down to like a 4.5 flat, and I'm looking to get like a 4.48, 4.47 in the 40. Now, like I said, they want me at 210, and I still have a lot of things to do. Like, the 40 might sound easy, but there's a lot of small techniques that can really decrease your actual time.
Yeah.
But really, I would say I feel pretty good at around 215, but it was simple, way easy to cut off. I would say it was just 7 pounds, really.
Yeah. Okay. It's just curious.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So on to fantasy. Many of us,
because we are a fantasy podcast. After
yeah. We are. We're not going to hide behind, you know, our beautiful masks here. But many of us analytics folk look at so many variables like speed, burst, agility, amount of production, size, BMI, blah blah blah. You'll hear it all in our neck of the woods. Which out of all of these is the most important to you as a player? Like, are you going towards your pro day with like, man, I got to nail that speed. If I get a four, four, five, then I don't care what I jump or anything. You know, like is speed the most important to you, or is one of these other metrics, athletic metrics, more important to you?
That's a great question. Really everything is important to me. Like I want to jump over 10 feet in broad. I want to jump a 38 in the vertical. I want to run a 4 flat in the agility shuttle. I want to run a 4.4 in the 40. Like, I want to do everything great. I don't want to just focus on one specific drill, because then it'll eventually just, I feel like I'm not that type of guy. I need to be great in every asset and everything I do. I don't want to just focus on one specific type of drill. That makes sense.
It totally makes sense.
Which of those do you think come most naturally to you? Is it the on the field stuff, or is it the workout stuff?
Oh, that's a great question. I feel like both. And now the only reason why I would say both is because I'm comfortable with everything. The only thing I could be a little bit more comfortable with is probably the 40, because I can get out faster. But it's just about keeping that top end speed throughout the whole process. The actual field drills come to me easily. The one of the biggest drills that come to me even more nice and more easily, you could say, is the agility shuttle. When I first ran it, I ran a 4.2 as our baseline test. But like I said, I want to get a 4 flat, not like a 3.9, something out of this range, really.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so last thing before we get into kind of some quick hitters.
Let's do it.
Have you ever played fantasy football?
So in high school, I had a lot of guys try to tell me to join their fantasy, this and that. Like, bro, we'll put like $5 down. Whoever wins, get the pot. But I never really got into it. I don't know if I will this year or next year, but I don't know. Who knows? Only God knows. With this year that we're having, who knows?
You do it if you're able to draft yourself first overall. Like, wouldn't that be a pretty decent, you know, reason to get into it, where you can just sit down and say, hey, guys, I'm on my own fantasy team. I personally, that would be my reason for getting to the NFL. That would mean I made it.
Right. No, I'm 100% with you. That's why I would get Madden, though, isn't it? But
hey, fair point.
Yeah. But I would say, yeah, I would draft myself first. I would be very disappointed if somebody took Tom before me. But I'm going for me first, man, because it's something.
Fair enough. You'll have to join one of my leagues next year. We can play together.
I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, I mean, I can't guarantee you're going to get yourself. I might take you first, but we'll see. Mark, you want to hit him with the quick hitters? Or
for the quick hitters, I would just have to say that let's start a league and let's co-manage with Jaquan. I mean, we will draft you first.
Yep.
Draft Tom second, because, you know, he's handing off to you and everything. It's all been determined. I mean, it's so good how we can sit around, have a few questions, few laughs, learn a few things about you, but really solve your problems. You know, you're going to go first. No, we started off with this whole thing that we wanted to get you drafted, but now we're not going to stop there. You're going to, you're going up.
We're going up, baby.
I just wanted to make a comment before the quick hitters. From what I gather, I'm no psychologist, but like, just listening to you, you're a guy that just wants to be good at everything. Like when I asked you about the which drill is most important to you or whatever, you're this kind of guy. And just talking with you on wanting to do so many different things, learning juggling during COVID, the whole kind of 9 yards. You just pave this idea like this is a guy that just wants to try everything. You want to be good at everything. And I think that those are really good qualities for a person to become successful is when they're interested in so many different things. They want to excel at different things. And I think it's good that you're not just pigeonholing yourself into one area. You're actually like opening up your eyes to everything. So I just want to say that it's very commending the way you kind of approach life and football. So before I hit you with all these heavy hitters.
Appreciate
okay,
you.
Okay, ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
let's do
these,
it.
These ones, Jaquanda has no idea what I'm going to ask. So, but he's ready. I'm going to ask 10 questions. One word or short word answers. No, don't expand on anything. It's, you know, brevity is wit here. And it's just kind of like getting, you know, the viewers and the listeners something a little bit extra on top to get to know you a little bit better before, you know, we draft you as your number, as our number one player. So question number one, name me the country you would like to visit the most.
Germany.
Germany. Okay. Number two, if you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Mind reader.
Ooh. Number three, who do you think is the most overrated actor?
About to ruffle some feathers.
What's that one guy? Who was it?
Oh, he knows.
I'm that one guy. Oh,
Ariana Grande's old boyfriend. What was his name? The comedian.
What was Davidson. Pete Davidson.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know who that is. We don't get him over here in China.
He's a nobody. That's fair.
I'm gonna look him up though. Pete Davidson. Yeah. All right. Who on the other side? Who do you think is the most underrated musical artist that you like?
Musical artist?
That could be any kind of form of music. Could be like a singer, band, rapper, whatever. Hip hop artist, jazz musician, whatever.
Nobody listens to Phil Collins anymore, so I would say him.
I jam to Phil Collins all the time. Tarzan is my shit.
I'm a drummer. So, okay, I just tell you, quick note. I know I'm diverting a little bit here, which, you know, I'm old. It happens. Us old guys, we divert. We get off topic. Phil Collins is one of my heroes because not only is he a great songwriter and singer, but he's also a drummer. And he's a drummer that plays left-handed, which is backwards. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a drummer that plays left-handed. So I've got a lot of love for Phil Collins and that actual drum fill that I just did from In the Air Tonight.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to beat that. So good answer. Very good answer.
That's
and
awesome.
Unexpected answer. So
that's all awesome. Right.
Which leads me to this next question. Totally, totally great segue to if you can come back in your next life as an animal, what would it be?
A lion.
Ooh. My daughter would love that. All right. Give me the first positive word that comes to mind when I mention this word. COVID.
Family.
Good answer. A brand new movie seen on the big screen at a theater, or would you rather binge watch a series?
Oh, that's a good one.
Assume.
Oh, man. I'm binge watching. I'm binge watching.
I'm liking this guy more and more. All right.
I'm a theater every time. I love the theaters.
I love the theater. No, I'm a binge watcher, so I'm with you, Jaquan. All the way, man. I mean, really, a movie for 2 hours with strangers, or I could be at home doing what I want and watch hours and hours of great show.
Hey, so. nothing will ever compare to seeing Avengers Endgame in theaters with a full theater.
Facts.
Man, nothing will compare to that. And I love binge watching series, but some things are all about the experience.
It's all about the experience. Like our experience today. I'm assuming you're a young lad of, you know, 20 something that you play a few video games as us old guys call it. You're a gamer.
Yes.
What is your favorite game to play or your favorite game ever?
Ooh, that's a much harder question.
My favorite game. Oh, ever.
This I like.
You're at deserted island. You can only have.
If you
one
if game. You need to give a top three, give a top three.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Damn the diff.
Call of Duty Dude. Modern Warfare 2. Fortnite.
Good choice.
And Madden.
Supplement. This is from my brother because I was kind of like throwing these questions together, and I said to my brother, "You got a good question for him?" And he said, "When you play Madden, which team are you?"
That's a great question. Now, I don't have a favorite question. Team, but when I did play Madden, I would say my favorites, and the only reason was because I loved the run with the quarterback. It was the Ravens. I was that guy.
There it is.
I had to be that guy. I was running with Lamar down there every play. But I would say the Ravens right now.
I love you on Baltimore, actually, but that's, you know, a side note. Just FYI, Jaquan, Tetris, Pong,
yes,
Pac-Man. Those are my top three games.
Like the Pac-Man. Anyway.
All right. If you could advertise one product, okay, so you become famous and this company is going to come approach you to advertise a product, and you get your choice because you're rich, you're being drafted number one by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You're a lion. I mean, you're a lion. You're running with Lamar. I mean, this is you're the man.
Yeah,
you can do whatever you want. And you could advertise one product. What would it be?
Body armor.
Nice. And number 10, the last question. Favorite thing to eat while watching a Super Bowl game?
When you're not on the strict diet.
Yes.
Chicken wings.
Yeah.
What kind of sauce?
Yeah.
I'm going to keep it simple. I'm going to go barbecue.
All right.
I'm going to keep it simple. I'm gonna keep
you like a little spice? You like a little spice?
If it's, let's just say it depends, because if somebody orders the spicy, I'll eat it. But if we keep it simple, just so I won't mess up the order. I don't want to hear nobody, why'd you get it? Keep it simple.
I'm a mild simple. Guy myself, regular old buffalo. So
I can respect that. I'm learning a lot about my co-host tonight.
I'd say I'm learning more about you, man.
I love you.
That we are, stiff arm middle yes. schoolers. Used to play rugby.
Don't judge. Texas.
Not judging.
Can't forget about the left-handed drummer either. Left-handed
there you
drummer.
Go.
That
there
I did go. Not know that.
Yeah. Left-handed, yes. We've learned a lot about you tonight. I mean, CPW, I'm getting it tattooed on my arm after the interview today. I love when you said hurdle when the time is right.
Yes.
That to me, maybe that might not be your favorite quote, but that was one of my favorite quotes that will resonate with me after this interview today. Hurdling when the time is right. It's all about opportunity and doing it when it's the right time. It's not doing it all the time because then people get used to it. So it's doing it at the right time, picking your moments. And so I've learned a lot about you tonight, and you know what? It's going to make this so much more genuine and spectacular when we're going to get your name out there. I just want to do a little plug on my company, Viridian Global. We've designed some shirts for Jaquan. Draft Jaquan. We're going to just draft you like there's no tomorrow. I mean, the NFL needs to see you. And if you want to support this wonderful cause to get this guy out there, he's a great guy. He's a great player. I mean, 1,500 yards in your final season. This guy's no joke. This guy is where it's at. And great having you on tonight. So we really appreciate it. I'm going to leave it with Michael at the end. But I just want to say thank you very much. Honored to have you on here. And we're going to continue our relationship. We're going to follow you. We're going to follow you to your path to success. And because we know you're going to do it. So
Hell yeah.
Not so literally, much. Because we're not creepy. But from a safe distance, at least 6 feet.
Yes, yes, we're not creepy guys. You know, I'm more of a bulldozer, right? Because I'm straight arming a middle school student, so I'm a little bit in your face, but no, oh, excellent having you tonight, and your answers were great. You're a great guy, and we're just so happy to get you out there. You deserve it. You work hard. You're smart. You're articulate. You're interesting. You're interested in so many different things. So thank you so much for being on with us tonight.
Hey, I appreciate you guys. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mike, for all the opportunities you guys gave me. I love this podcast. This was fun. Literally, this was fun. I liked it.
Hey, man. Well, you know, after you get settled in the NFL or anything, we'll have you back on. We'll talk about your first season and all that, and definitely, maybe how your fantasy football team's going then.
Say less. I'm going to shout you guys out and everything. I love it.
Oh, I love to hear that. Well, it was, you know, it was great having you on. It was great getting to know you. And I think, you know, I think the listeners of this podcast are going to become big fans, because you came off as a great guy, very genuine. And, you know, it goes to show that it's not a facade. It is who you are, and you're passionate. You really care about the game, but you care about so much more than that too. And, you know, I think you're going to gain a lot of fans. On behalf of Mark, on behalf of Jaquan, on behalf of myself, and on behalf of everyone at the Undroppables, thank you for listening, and #DraftJaquan.
Thank you, guys.
Draft Jaquan.